guess them shutting the doors is kind of my cue to go. It's a nice, intimate setting here today. So welcome. I'm not sure whether it was the fact that it's a 400-level session that's put the heebie-jeebies up people, or whether it was the quality Australian beer last night. Sorry, I'm from New Zealand, so I get to. We're going to have a little bit of ribbing today. So welcome to Azure 432. My name's Chris Auld. I work for a company called Intergen. Headquarters is in New Zealand, but we've got offices, four in New Zealand, got an office in Sydney, office in Perth, office in Seattle, and I live in the wonderful thermal wonderland of Rotorua and just commute to wherever I happen to be in demand that week. So this session is a deep dive on Windows Azure SQL Database, and in particular the Federations feature of Windows Azure SQL Database, which is basically a technology that we can use to scale out our data tier. Can I just get a quick show of hands? Who's I am going to assume some knowledge of SQL Azure, right? Sorry, Windows Azure SQL Database, I keep changing the name. Who's used Federations already? Nobody. Awesome. Who's used SQL Azure already? Quite a few. That is exactly the audience that I would be wanting. Perfect. So, we'll run through a bit of an overview, sort of quickly around exactly what federations are, and we'll go through a bit of a demo, which is really just, you know, throwing some T-SQL into Management Studio just to really show you, you know, just really kicking the tires how this stuff works. And then we're going to drill down on some tips around sort of designing and developing our federated databases. So key selection in terms of federation keys, how we deal with reference tables, central tables, and our federated tables. We'll talk about how we deal with keys, in particular the primary keys of the tables that exist in our federation members. And we'll talk about how we deal with fan-out queries, and in particular thinking about how we do fan-out queries for aggregates. We'll then talk a bit about administration and how we can deal with our federation layout. So, you know, specifically how we are split, when to split. You know, some concepts around that. How we deal with our schema. You know, and that is sort of a derivative of the fan out query approach. How we can deal with scale down. So that's really, you know, can we deal with elastic load? And that is a hard problem. We'll talk a bit about that as we proceed. And then some discussions about what's coming next in terms of the federation functionality. So before we get underway too much, we had some name changes because, bless them, nothing Microsoft's marketing folks like more than changing the name of things. And I don't work for Microsoft, so I can give them a bit of a ribbing. The current trend is name it what it is. So we have the new name of Windows Azure SQL Database. So I'm not sure when you have a database whether it's a Windows Azure SQL Database, but I guess that's what it is. So I will interchangeably use SQL Database and SQL Azure, I'm sure, throughout the session. They are exactly the same thing. So a bit of an overview. The cloud is awesome. The cloud is really awesome for a particular set of scenarios for massive scale apps, right, and particularly for what we think of as bursty apps, right? You know, the canonical example, selling tickets for sporting events, you know, census, elections, those sorts of things where you have massive spikes of load, right? And the reason the cloud's wonderful for that is these cloud data centers are ginormous, and they have, you know, massive amount of capacity on tap, and that capacity is in effect unlimited to you and I, right? And the reason it's unlimited to you and I is we're not really bound by the physical number of nodes in the data center as much as we're bound by the limit on our credit card. And yes, there'll be a few in the room with the Amex Platinum, and I can assure you, you can thoroughly whack your Amex card on Windows Azure. I could tell you a little story about when Windows Azure first started going live and they turned on billing, and a particular show pony in the room had run up 8 extra large instances to show just how clever he was in terms of factoring prime numbers and forgotten to turn them off, and his first monthly bill was $6,000. I won't call that person out, yeah, it wasn't very, I didn't know who to call up and get it fixed. So there's masses of capacity on tap, right? And we can deploy that capacity, turning it on and off. Right? And therefore, you know, we really get to take advantage of this sort of drive for commodity sort of price performance in these cloud data centers. And the way that the cloud data centers achieve the sort of commoditized pricing is they deploy commodity hardware and then use multiple nodes to achieve high availability. Right? So they really give us the ability to take advantage of massive economies of scale, but also to a degree massive qualities of scale. Right? So when we think about these massive data centers, you know, they've been run by the smartest data center engineers in the world. You know, they've typically got multiple redundant power supplies, multiple redundant network supplies, and so forth. So as a rule, we should be getting, you know, significant benefits in terms of overall deployment quality by doing that. And then we can take advantage of this idea of elasticity, which means that as we provision hardware, we can turn stuff on and off as we go. Right? And what that allows us to do is basically tune our bill to our workload. If we have a massive spike, we can actually turn on sufficient capacity. If you think of how you try and deal with that on-premise, right, if you've got a massive spike in load, it may only last sort of 4 or 5 hours. You've got a couple of options. Right? You either just give up, throw your hands up and say, I'm just not going to be able to deal with that. Right? You know, or you have to provision sufficient hardware for that peak, and it's going to sit around doing nothing for the rest of the month or the rest of the year, or you know, ad infinitum into the future. Anyone have a really sort of spiky workload problem? Can I ask what it is? Yep, exactly. Yeah, so it's, you know, it's you're dealing with user behavior, right? And you can't exactly say to the users, hey, we need you to kind of spread your work out throughout the week because we can't deal with your crap on a Friday afternoon. Right, you know, you just can't get away with that. And it is a very hard problem to solve on-premise. This is really the unique selling proposition of the cloud. And actually, you know, we've been able to sort of deal with, you know, the cloud's great. We have, you know, application patterns for doing scale-out, stateless web servers, stateless application tier, turn on multiple instances, Bob's your auntie's living lover, off you go. You know, we are well-equipped for building scale-out applications. The one place where we have sort of historically lagged is around how do we scale the data tier. Now, for your typical small scenario, the easiest way to scale, right, and if you think about how you scale your data tier on-premise, what do? Big box, right? Keep buying a bigger box. You know, and a big box these days can actually be quite a big box for not a whole lot of coin. But at the end of the day, for a really, really large scenario, and you know, if you think about some of these cloud scenarios, they can be really, really large. We have to have some sort of multi-box solution. We have to scale out. A couple of reasons. There are massive diseconomies of scale in computing. And what I mean by that is those really big boxes, right, they are really, really expensive. You know, if you go and see Mr. Unisys or Fujitsu and say, I want a 64-way server, right? That's a whole lot more than buying going to see Mr. Dell and saying, I'll have 64 one-way servers. Right? So there are big diseconomies of scale. And eventually, we're going to just reach a limit. One, we can't buy a big enough box. Two, we start hitting contention problems on our single box, right? We're going to hit memory contention. You know, we're working with a database, so we're going to probably hit lock contentions. You know, it just doesn't scale all that well. So what we want to try and do is we want to try and scale out. And scale out potentially offers us this promise of, you know, unlimited sort of linear scale. You know, and if we're building some of these big sort of cloud scale apps, scale out in our data tier is something that we are going to need to achieve. So federations in SQL Azure basically give us a mechanism to scale our data tier. So if you think about your sort of your canonical three-tier app, we scale our web and app tier just by adding more machines. Right? Typically, we'll wire them up behind a load balancer, might be a smart load balancer, right, so that has node affinity, might be a dumb load balancer, and just basically round robins the request to our boxes. But we sit the boxes behind a load balancer, and we can just add more boxes, load balancer routes the requests. Peachy. And then what you typically do is buy a big ass database server. Doesn't work. It eventually runs out of oomph on-premise, but you've got a lot more headroom on-premise because you can buy quite big database servers to run on-premise. In the cloud, you can't, right? You know, even if you go and see someone like Amazon with Quad XL instances, it is really hard to push performance out of those in terms of a database workload. They really choke at the I/O level. So what we need to do is scale out that data tier, and federations in SQL Azure allow us to scale out that data tier. So basically, we can add and remove SQL Azure nodes, effectively database instances, and those database instances have mechanisms that allow us to route our application to the appropriate node, effectively a load balancer for databases. Route our application to the appropriate node, what we call data-dependent routing, so that we can go and get the database that holds the data that we're interested in. And it means we can basically scale our application on demand. So this is effectively a sharding pattern, a bit like horizontal partitioning. This allows us to horizontally partition our database and to do so under transactional load. So that means that we can actually be throwing transactions at the database. We can say chop the database in half. SQL Azure will go chop the database in half, move the two databases apart. Still, you're firing transactions at this. It's putting the transactions and effectively reconciling them back into the right copies. And then eventually it's just going to go whack. It'll cut your connections. You'll reconnect, you know, 100 milliseconds later, and you're now talking to two databases. And you can just keep on doing that. Chop it into 3, chop it into 4, chop it into 10, chop it into 200, and so forth. All right, so basically we can then just add more database capacity. So, bunch of uses for federation. So it allows us to scale beyond those limits of a single database. On SQL Azure, single database limit, 150 gig. And then there are some limits around throughput. Those limits are harder to quantify because they are dependent on a number of factors. So, you know, if you think about a big application, you are going to need to consider scale out. You are going to need to consider using federations. It's got economic advantages. So we can deal with those elastic demand curves. We can potentially scale out across multiple databases for a period of time and then reconcile our data back into a single database, delete those databases once we're done. So it gives us the opportunity to effectively turn capacity on, turn capacity off in our data tier as we would do in our application tier. It gives us opportunities around multi-tenancy. So imagine for a minute that you are building, say, an online accounting application, where effectively each customer of your accounting application you know, has their own set of data. What this would allow you to do is effectively shard those customers out across multiple databases. So you might have each database carrying a couple of hundred customers. Right? And if you start getting customers who are really big, right, you can actually choose to chop their portion of data out into its own database. And it is reasonably simplified in terms of overall development and administration. So the platform is actually supporting this sharding pattern. It does provide the data-dependent routing. You are using standard SQL Server tooling. And you are working with a proper relational database management system. All right, so if you think about all of these NoSQL-type data stores, people familiar with when I talk about NoSQL data stores? Right, those are making significant compromises in terms of what we'd classically think of as a data store, in order to provide you with some of this sort of scale-out capability. So in terms of how this works, so within a federated database, we have a concept of a federation. And a federation is really sort of a named dimension across which we're going to shard our data. Right, so if you think about a classic e-commerce scenario, you might have a federation called customers, right? And that means you would effectively horizontally slice your data on a customer, up to a customer by customer basis. So basically into ranges of customers, right? And you would then include in that all of the data that relates to that customer. So the customer entry, maybe their orders, maybe their line items. Right? So we do that using a thing called the create federation statement. And that basically creates this named concept. We need to provide a federation key, right? And that federation key is what's going to determine the boundaries of the ranges as we chop this data up. As we chop it up, we have this concept called an atomic unit. And the atomic unit is what we use when we're connecting to these database members. The atomic unit is basically the smallest grain of data that we could potentially shard our database into. So if we think about the concept of our customers federation, what is the atomic unit? One customer, right? Now, potentially, a database could contain more than one atomic unit, right? But we can't have one customer spread across two databases. Right? The very most, as we start slicing this data up, we're going to get to a point of indivisibility. Right? The point of indivisibility is one atomic unit, one customer. And the atomic unit's important to remember because when you come to using data-dependent routing, we work in atomic units. So then once we've got our federation created, we get the opportunity to effectively chop up our database. So to tell SQL Azure that we want it to start basically taking our federation and chopping it into individual member databases. And to do that, we use a command called the split command. And the split command will do an online partition of our database. So that means it's going to take a single database node, right, and it's actually going to split that into two database nodes. Right? And it's going to do that even while we are sending transactional load into the federated database. So it's going to appropriately reconcile transactions into the two copies as it's making those copies happen. If you want an idea of how this works, people familiar with the idea that SQL Azure has this high availability, three copies of your data, those copies are kept transactionally in sync. Right? Now you're hammering some load at your three copies and one of them craps itself. Right? So what does SQL Azure do? Right. It starts firing your transactions at another copy, and now it's got two copies, it needs to bring a third copy up. Right? So as it brings that third copy up, it's effectively doing transaction log replay into that third copy, and it's that technology that they are using, right, the same technology that provides the high availability, that they're using to support this online repartitioning. So it's kind of neat. We then have another mechanism that we can do called drop, and drop basically drops, and it does drop these databases and then takes the range of data that they are covering and brings it back into this database. And when I say it takes the range of data, it just says that this database handles that range of keys. It just drops the data. The data's goodbye, good night, nurse, gone. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. So if you want to deal with elasticity, right, so partition up and then potentially collapse back down, you are responsible for your own data reconciliation to bring the data back in. And we'll talk about some approaches for that. All right. That is what merge would be. I would love merge. Please give feedback to the team. At the end of the session, there'll be a link to a guy called Jihan, whose last name is utterly unpronounceable to me, his blog. Please give him the feedback for merge. I have been banging my drum on merge for some time now. Merge would be very nice, but you can see the reason why they might not have merge yet, right? Because merge actually requires them to go and write a whole lot of new code. They've already got the code for split, because split's basically the same as, oh dear, my database just crapped itself. Merge is something completely different. They just haven't got that yet. So then we have this thing called data-dependent routing. And data-dependent routing allows us to write our application so that our application can be ignorant of the underlying topology of our shards. So our application doesn't actually care if it's dealing with two databases or 200 databases. Because what the application says, it says to SQL Server, I want to work with customer ID 325, and SQL Azure then says, OK, I'm going to route you through to this database. And the nice thing about that is that the data-dependent routing works as we perform that split operation. Right? So I want to deal with 325, OK, I'm dealing with 325, but you've just split 300 to 400. And I'm actually moving databases, okay, I'm just going to cut your connection, I reconnect at 325, I'm going to route you to this database now. So the data-dependent routing is really important. So it means that we don't have to manage our own shard map, which is what you would have historically had to have done, right? And we don't have any, because you typically have to cache that shard map, because that's going to be a really hot set of data, right? So we're going to have cache coherency issues as we do that split operation. Without data-dependent routing at the data tier, right, there is no way we could do a split under load. So what we do there is we basically say, use federation, name the federation, and then we tell it the federation key that we want to use. So what we're passing in is always what? The atomic unit that we want to work with. Right, so we're always handing in the atomic unit that we want to work with, and we will be routed to the appropriate database instance for that atomic unit. So let's have a look at some T-SQL, and I am on number 3. This is the coolest AV system ever. I've got like HDMI, mini HDMI, DisplayPort, micro HDMI. It's super cool. Well done, AV guy. Big ups. Okay, so we'll get over my fawning at the technology. So I'm in SQL Server Management Studio. This is version 2012. Version 2012 does have compatibility to work with SQL Azure, and in particular to work with SQL Azure federations. I'm going to start by creating a new database. May have dropped my connection. No, there we go. So I've created the new database, and then I need to connect to that database. What I then do is I'm going to create my federation. What you typically want to do is you want to create your federation, create all your tables before you go and start splitting your database. And the reason is that we have to manually reconcile our schema across federation members if we split too soon. So we'll create our federation. So you'll see in this case, we have that customer federation. So what I'm building is basically AdventureWorks, right? I've just pinched a bit of AdventureWorks, so I'm going to build that. So what we're then going to do is we're going to connect to the federation root. And so the federation root is this TechEd 2012 database. And I'm just going to show you some of the metadata that we collect about federations. So you'll see at the moment I've connected to the federation root, so I'm dealing with the database TechEd 2012. I've got my single federation that I just defined. That federation has a single range, right? So it basically ranges from negative 9 to the power of lots, or 2 to the power of lots, right? Effectively min big int to max big int. Yeah? And because I've got a single range, right, that whole range is just included in my single database at the moment. Right. So if I then connect to a specific federation member, right, so you'll see that I've now connected to that federation member, and again, that particular member is covering that entire range for me at the moment. It's going to make more sense once we actually start splitting this up, but before we split it up, we'll create some schema. So what we're going to do now is we're going to connect to our federation member. All right? We're just going to pass in, we can pass in any ID because we've got the whole range in the single database. And we're going to do it with filtering off. So in order to perform any DDL operations against our database, once we connect to a federated member, we need to turn filtering off. Filtering basically, and we're going to drill into filtering in a bit of detail shortly, filtering effectively decides whether or not it's going to let me deal just with the atomic unit I've asked it for. So if filtering was on, I could only deal with customer ID 10. With filtering off, I can basically, I own the database, I can do whatever I want. So we'll do that, and then what we're going to do is we're going to create our customer table. And again, if you've spent lots of time with AdventureWorks, should be super familiar. The important thing is that last line there, right? So we're saying that this is a federated table. It is federated on customer ID, right? It knows that the federation we're working with, because that's the federation we're connected to, and we are federated on customer ID. So effectively, we're mapping the federation key to a column in our table. And it's saying, I have incorrect syntax. That would be really painful, wouldn't it? When in doubt, use the keyboard. Okay. So, that was customer. We'll do order. Order is super simple. Again, just paired back. Right. So again, I am federating on customer ID. So effectively what this means is every table in here in my database that I want to be sharded out, right, is going to need to have that customer ID column in it. So I'm going to need to push that all the way down through. Right? So we've got order here. When I create the order lines table, what am I probably going to need to do? Which you wouldn't typically do in a database. Push customer ID all the way through. Right? Yes. Yes, I am doing this on a federation member. Yeah. Yes, because the federation members, what I'm in order to create the federated tables, I create those federated tables inside my federation, which means I need to actually be connected to my federation, of which there's currently one member. All right. Yes. Yeah, so the question is if you're to move the data from your on-premise database into the cloud, so on-premise obviously doesn't have federations, what you would probably do is you'd do largely what I'm doing here, right? You'd create your federation, connect to your federation member, right? Create your schema, so create your tables, and then you would insert your data. Yeah, if you end up with changes in your schema, right, you'll need to go and change the schema in the cloud. If you have split your database, right, each federation member, so each sharded database has an independent schema, and you can, once you turn filtering off, go and create a real mess for yourself by going and changing the schema in each database and end up with different schema across all your databases. That can be a good thing. Right, because potentially you could say, actually, I'm going to go and roll out a patch for this range of data. I'm going to go and patch for customer ID 0 to 100, right? Because they're my early adopters. I'll patch for them. That worked. Okay, I'll go and roll it out to the rest of my customers. Right, so what you'd do is you'd basically create your tables. You'd insert some dummy data. Right? So again, I have to have filtering off here. The reason I have to have filtering off is because I want to insert multiple customer IDs, right? If I left filtering on, I would only be allowed to insert what? One customer with ID of 10, right? So, filtering off, dump some data in there. So I'll dump some customers and some orders. Okay, so I've got some data in there. So let's go again and route my connection to that federated member, passing customer ID of 100. And actually have a look at some of the ranges of my data. Now the interesting one to have a look at here is to have a look at this one. Oh, and I tried to insert more rows. It's a whole lot of fun, isn't it? So the interesting line here is that one right at the bottom, right? Where I'm basically asking it to tell me the range of data that I just queried. So the range of data that I can see at the moment is ID of 55 through to ID of 210. Why is that? Well, because the lowest customer ID I've got in there is 55, and the highest customer ID I've got in there is 210. If I now go and split that database, so what I'm going to do is connect back to the Federation route, go alter Federation and split at customer ID 100. Now, split is a background operation. So basically what that's done is it's dropped an item in a queue to go and perform that split. And I'm just going to sit here and press the refresh button while talking aimlessly until that background task has happened. Why is it a background operation? Right, well, you can think of it. Okay, so what's it doing? Well, it's basically doing the same thing it does when it goes and tries to recover a database. So it's creating those two new copies, and it's moving the data out into the appropriate copies, and I can still keep throwing data at this, right? So even while it's finishing, I could throw some more data at it. You know, I could go and rerun this thing, for example. Oh, I'd need to connect to the Federation member. I won't do that. Okay, so there's my split operation, 99% complete. Quick note for young players, you can only do one split at a time. So if you think you can just batch up and have a whole lot of splits, you can't do that. You've got to write some clever code, use a for loop, do a split, effectively query this DMV, right, until the split's complete, then go to the next one, then go to the next one, then go to the next one, then go to the next one. I have got some code somewhere. If you want some code that shows how to do that, flick me a mail and I'll share some code with you. Okay, so I've now got two Federation members. We'll see that if I connect back to the Federation route, right, so I've got my customer Federation, and I've now got two members, one of which goes from min value to 100, one of which goes from 100 to max value. I now have two databases.
So where does customer ID 100 live?
Customer ID 100 lives in this one. All right. So we can tell that because if I connect to the second Federation member, all right, so what I'm doing this time is saying use Federation, customer ID equals 100, with filtering off. Yeah, yes, you can only split on discrete values. So your Federation key can be big int, unique identifier, or var binary. Right. And it's going to treat those effectively as a range, so you can split at any increment of those. And we'll talk a bit about the keys soon, because you'll typically want to use unique identifier. All right, so you'll see there's my database name, and the database names are all going to be system managed for you. Right, so you typically don't want to write any code that needs to know about the individual databases. Because if you're doing that, you're probably circumventing the data-dependent routing, and you're going to get yourselves into hot water if you start doing splits under load in your application. So again, I've got filtering off at the moment, so what are we going to see this query return? It's going to return 100 to 210, right? And again, if I do a select star, I'm going to get all the data back from that. So if I now go and connect to the same second Federation member, customer ID 100, so to connect with that atomic unit, with filtering on, in this case, I am connecting in the context of that atomic unit, and I'm going to be protected from doing anything dumb, right? Because basically, any time I work with a federated table, right, i.e. any table where it's federated, I've got that federated on statement in my create table, right, it's going to effectively add for me
a where clause at the end that says where customer ID equals 100. All right, so that means if I do select min, select max, what am I going to see? 100, 100, right? If I do a select star from customer, what am I going to see? One row, right? So it's basically saving my bacon. So for the most part, when you're working in your application code, you want to have filtering on. So it stops you from effectively introducing consistency problems. So before we go back to the slides, I'm going to do one last thing, which is just to run another split, because I want three splits once we come back and actually have a look at some of the fan-out queries. So I'm going to split a customer ID 150 as well. And I'm going to go back to my deck. So reasonably sort of good lap around. So when we think about database design, so when we work with a federated SQL Azure database, we really have three different styles of tables. We have what we call the federated tables. And so those are the tables that contain data that is going to be distributed or sharded by my federation. So effectively, it's those tables that have a slice of the data in each database. They are your tables that are optimized for read and write of data at scale. When we're working with those tables, right, we're effectively bounded, right, by the scope of each federation member. Ideally, we should bound ourselves with the scope of that atomic unit, right? So ideally, we should bound ourselves and effectively lock ourselves in by turning filtering on. But if we've been sort of a little loose, we are bounded by the federation member that row happens to exist in. All right, so that means, you know, you probably could do a transaction that updates data for customer ID 100 and 101 in a single transaction, but it's not best practice. Right? Effectively, those should really be two transactions, two connections with filtering on, passing the different atomic unit in. Right? It just keeps us a bit safer. Yes?
When it does the split.
Yes. How does it pick what size database in Azure when it does the split? I'm pretty sure it just runs off the same size database as when you originally created your root database. In terms of database sizes, and we'll talk a bit about this later, you ideally want to use the smallest database you possibly can. If you can get away with using 100 meg databases for this, right, there are a whole lot of benefits, because each database can potentially have the full power of a single server inside the SQL Azure data center. Right, so the more finely you can split your data, the better. Obviously, that doesn't work if you're splitting because of data volume, but you know, if you can achieve smaller sizes, that's great.
Do each of the federated databases have to be in the same data center?
They do, yes. So at the moment, the federated databases do have to be in the same database. So there's no concept of having federations that end up being sharded out across multiple data centers. I don't think that there's anything like that coming yet. So those are our federated tables. We then have a thing called reference tables. And reference tables are basically duplicate copies of the data in each federation member. So if you think about our e-commerce scenario, right, where we've got our orders federation, our order lines probably want to reference products. So what we probably need is a copy of our products table, right? If you want to have sort of referential integrity enforcement in each of those databases. Right? So we've basically got a couple of options. One, we can have soft integrity, right? Where we effectively drop the product ID into the order lines table, but there's no corresponding foreign key relationship to a products table in that database. Right? Or we can do a full copy of the products table into every single member, or we could do some sort of hybrid where maybe we just have a reference table that contains all the product IDs. So your reference tables are optimized for read operations at scale. So where you need to do joins, where you need to include those as part of your queries alongside the federated tables. You must manually modify that data. You are responsible for keeping that data up to date and in sync,
and that data is only ever going to be eventually consistent because there's no cross-database transactions in SQL Azure. So it's only ever eventually consistent. So similar to, you know, the various NoSQL data stores, Windows Azure tables, and so forth. And then what we have are called central tables, and those are tables that exist in the Federation root database. So in my case, if I was to create tables to connect to the Federation root and go create table, that would create a central table that only exists in the root. And again, we need to be really careful with that, right, because that ends up being a single point of load. Right? So really, we're only ever going to be dealing with that if we're touching it infrequently or if we're reading it through a cache. In terms of picking your federation, so normalize your data model and then think about the scale first principle. So we effectively need to pick out table groups that we are going to scale out. Right? And so our table groups are effectively properties that are going to be tied with a foreign key relationship. And you might need to sort of start thinking about this almost sort of hierarchically, because you are going to need to flow your federation key out through all of those tables that are going to exist in that federated member. So if we think about this, right, we've got our idea of our customer federation. That probably works well for typical scenarios, right, because our atomic unit is a single customer. Unlikely that we would ever have a single customer span over multiple databases, right? If it's Chris all shopping at the outdoor store, right? What if one of our customers was called Walmart, right? So that might be slightly different. So you do actually need to think about this is somewhat of an art, right? There's no hard and fast rule that says actually, you know, you can get doing it down to a customer's atomic unit's going to work. Because there may be times where you're gonna grow beyond a single customer. So we then need to pick our federation keys and define our atomic units. So the federation key and atomic unit are closely linked, right? Because your atomic unit is effectively the smallest grain that you can get inside your federation key. Right? And that's gonna be the target of, yes. Yes, yep, absolutely. So it means if you've got customer, order lines, right, you're probably going to want to have a customer ID column in all of those tables so that all of those tables can be created with a federated on CID equals customer ID. It does slap normalization up a little bit, right? I mean, yeah, strictly speaking, that is not a normalized database, right? But that's what you need to do. It's not like you're not being really naughty, right? If you end up with the customer's first name in your order lines table, yeah, that's probably, you know, having Mr. Cold or Mr. Date turning in their graves, right? But putting the customer ID in to support sharding is probably not going to get you in a great deal of trouble. To me, it's not a fundamental bastardization of the relational model. Others may disagree.
So if I want to take an existing database,
yes,
and make it multi-tenanted,
yes,
do I just add a tenant ID to every table in the database?
So the question is, if I want to take an existing database and make it multi-tenanted, can I just add a tenant ID to every table in the database? And the answer is probably, as long as every table contains a set of data that would end up being related to a single tenant. Right, so if we think back to my online accounting system example, so yep, sort of the general transactions table probably does, right? Because each transaction is going to be for a particular tenant. Maybe the tax codes table doesn't. So maybe the tax codes table needs to be a reference table. But it's not a bad starting point. So if you create a new customer, the database engine is not going to create a new database. If you create a new customer, it's going to find an existing database, right? Because your federation range, there will always be a member that is covered by your federation range. Right? Because we always start covering the whole address space, and then we split, so we chop it in half. So we're still covering the whole address space, and then we split, so we chop it into four. We're still covering the whole address space. So anytime you create a customer for a given key, it's always going to be able to resolve that database. And so then we have those reference tables, right? And those reference tables are basically data that we clone to each and every member. That gives us some benefits in terms of programmability, right? That means that we can actually do queries that go across foreign key relationships inside these tables, right? Because if they're not there, they've got to be somewhere, right? If we put them somewhere else in another database, we can't do cross-database queries in SQL Azure, right? So the scope of our transaction, the scope of our query is always a single database member. So, really, our reference tables are the sets of tables that we're going to use for lookups, right? That we want to, that we're potentially going to load up, right? It's not stuff that's only ever going to live in the cache. If it's only ever going to live in the cache, right, and we're only ever going to touch it maybe once every 10 minutes, you probably just stick it in the root database, right? But if we actually need to join to it in queries, it needs to be a reference table, it needs to go in each of those copies, right? And we are going to be eventually consistent. So, unique keys. So obviously we still need to have keys for our data. And the identity property is not allowed on federated tables. Who can tell me why that would be? It's shared, right? Shared stuff doesn't scale, right? Locks don't scale. Right? And effectively, we would have to have some sort of locking mechanism to make that happen, right? Because we've got a single counter, and we need to make sure that we've got guaranteed in-order generation of those keys. Right? So identity is nice, you know, if you're a Microsoft Access developer. Identity is good, you know, you get less index fragmentation. There are a bunch of benefits to it, but it just doesn't work in a federated database. Right? And in fact, you know, you kind of have to give up some of those index fragmentation worries when you move to SQL Azure anyway, because you don't get to do any sort of detailed physical optimization of your database. Right? So it does create that bottleneck. So typically you'll want to use a unique identifier. Who can tell me what a unique identifier, what a GUID actually is? It's a GUID. GUID. Yeah. Sorry, pronunciation. What is it? Well, it's unique. It is the hexadecimal representation of a 128-bit integer. Right. So var binary will work as well. Yep, var binary will work as well. I mean, GUID's just super easy to deal with, right? Because we can then turn it into an integer and do integer arithmetic with it. So, a bunch of benefits there. Doesn't require centralized I generation. We can generate it at any tier of the app. The GUID algorithm provides a nice random distribution over an absolutely enormous address space. So, if what we want to do is actually spread our data evenly across the address space, right? Because we want to just effectively chop this thing up into equal chunks, then GUID is really nice. It's a little less nice when you think about, when you think about how am I going to use that to do some data-dependent routing. And a good example that I use is we've talked about this idea of having a customer federation, right? And, you know, we can effectively chop it up by customers. How would we deal with logins in this scenario? So when we think about logging into our website, what do we usually get from the user? Email address and password that we hash immediately, right? That don't work here, right? Because if we're federated by customer ID, we need to have that customer ID somewhere. So what you'd typically do is you'd probably have another federation called the login federation, right? And if you actually expected to have login under load, you'd probably shard out your logins as well, right? And you would probably federate those based on either the email address itself right? Your var binary representation of the email address or some sort of hash of the email address. That would allow you to then receive the email address, use data-dependent routing to go to the appropriate database and see if that email address and password resolve to an appropriate password hash, and then what would you get back from the login table? A customer ID, right, that we'd then use to actually do the work. So, that's this idea of data-dependent routing, right? So we need to consider the fact that we're going to do data-dependent routing when we come up with exactly how we're going to federate our data. Data-dependent routing routes us to a single atomic unit, right? And as we go through and split our database, those atomic units are going to be moved around by SQL Azure, right? But it's always going to guarantee that when we use federation, it will connect us to the correct database member. So we're never going to lose that transactional data. We've spoken a bit about filtering. So when we turn filtering on, we are basically being connected to a single atomic unit. We can still see all the reference data, but when we look at any table that is federated, right, basically that has that federated on statement in the create table, right, we are only going to be able to see rows for that atomic unit. Passing customer ID 100, you only see the rows for 100. So you only see the customer row for 100. You only see the order rows with the customer ID of 100. You only see the order lines rows with the customer ID of 100. We turn filtering off, we have access to the full member. We can touch any row in that range of data, right? We can run DDL. And we need to have filtering off when it comes to doing fan-out queries, right? So if we want to go and potentially aggregate up data from a single federation member, we have to have filtering off because we want to see all of those rows. So fan-out queries. So fan-out queries are basically what we end up having to do in a situation where we want to write a query that potentially needs to deal with data across more than one federation member. So if we think about our e-commerce scenario, the CEO has just come and said, I want to know what the average order size is. That's hard. Well, it's really hard. Who can tell me why it's really hard? One, we have to go across multiple databases. Well, we're going to loop around each database. So, that's the first hard thing we have to do is we have to go through and touch every single database. And we can get what? The average order size in each database. But the average aggregate is not additive for averageable. So the average of the averages is not the overall average. Right? So it's really hard because we have to have a bit of a think about that. And we'll have a look at that one. I mean, the reason I picked that one is it's a super hard one, right? So we need to potentially do some reporting. Right? So if we're going to do unions, aggregates across members. Or potentially we've got these unaligned queries. And so the login operation that we spoke of before was an unaligned query, right? It's a query where I don't have the atomic unit identifier. Go log me in, I've got the customer's email address, I have no idea what the customer ID is, right? And really, if we start seeing lots of those at load, we probably need to go back and have a think. We probably need a separate federation that lets us do a lookup first. Right? So go and do a lookup in this federation under load and take the result from that and go and actually perform the operation rather than going through and touching every single database. Now, if we're in a situation where we're 200 databases wide and every single login operation to our system goes and effectively does a parallel query across all of our 200 databases, we've got some problems. In terms of those fan-out queries, super simple ones, so just union all. So I just want to go and get me every single order. So that's pretty simple. Go into a select star on orders on every single federation database member. Right? And then we've got this idea of fan-out queries that are aligned and unaligned and additive and non-additive aggregates. Right? So go and get me the total dollar value of sales for the past month. That's a nice additive aggregate. Go get me the average dollar sales value for the past month. that's a little harder to do. In terms of writing those queries, so what you're typically going to be doing is you're going to send a query to each and every member, get those results back, and then do some post-manipulation with those, right? So in the case of a simple union, yep, we'll just bang them all together. In the case of an additive aggregate, okay, so go get the sum on each database and then sum the sums. In the case of the average, a little bit harder, and we'll have a look at that. And then what you'll do is you'll go and actually run that, you know, against each member. In terms of running it against each member, you're going to do that from your application tier. You'll typically, you really will want to do that using some sort of multi-threaded approach, right? Easiest way to do that is to do what in .NET 4? Task parallel, right? Why do we want to do it multi-threaded? Where's the bottleneck? Where's most of the time going to be taken in that operation? The database going across the network hop. We really don't want to have our application thread sit there and do stuff all while we call across the network to the database, and the database goes out to disk, picks up the data, comes back across the network, right? We actually, let that application thread go and do other stuff. Right? So you really do want to run that in a multi-threaded approach. And indeed, the code I'm going to put up on my blog later does have that approach to doing things. So let's have a look at this in demo land. So I've got some fan out queries here. So we'll have a look at that. The question is, how do you find all of the shards? So what I'm going to use is I'm going to use this little federations utility tool here. And you can go have a look at this. I'll post the URL on my blog later. And you can have a look at the source code for it, and you can actually see how it goes about finding each of the federation members. And so this one, basically, it goes through the federation member, and it as it goes through the loop, it just finds out what is the starting ID for the range of the next federation member, goes back to the start of the loop, use federation, right, filtering off customer ID or whatever key ID equals and the first value in the range for the next federation member, and it just goes around and does that. If you're going to do it in parallel, you'll need to effectively pull the shard map beforehand, right? Which means that consistency is hard with these queries, right? Because again, you've pulled a shard map, and you're effectively cached the shard map. So if you're going to do it in a multi-threaded fashion, just be careful, right? Because you've got the potential to pull the shard map, and then you know where all the shards are going to go to are, right? But if there are split operations occurring in the background, right, there's the potential for your shard map to be invalidated, and you're going to miss portions of your database. Potentially there's a much smaller window, right? So it's really just the window when you finish with one member and then connect to the next member, right? And the way you do that is you finish with one member, right? So this member finished at 200. Okay, so my next one is 201. So you should basically, as long as we're only ever splitting and not merging, you know that 201 is always going to be a separate database from what 200 was. So, what I've got here is basically this sort of helper utility that's going to let me run some of these fan-out queries.
And so we're going to run against our customer federation. And if I'm not careful, I'm going to run long here because we've had some questions. So if we go run that query, right, so effectively that's going to give me the count for each of my three federation members. Pretty simple. If I go just a simple select star, that's going to go and get those rows and just output the rows from my entire range. So it's going to go from 55 through to about 210. Okay, so then if we start thinking about some of these aggregate queries. So, what we're looking for here is get the total order value by customer having a value greater than 1,000. Now that works pretty well because it's an aligned query. Right? It's an aligned query because the federation key is in my group by clause. So that means I'm actually going to get the data just straight back as I want it. All right, and then obviously I can also, I can have more columns in my group by clause if I want to, right? So that's what I want, right? So that's going through each and every federation member, getting me the total order value by customer and outputting it. Now that would also work for average, right? Why would it work for average? Because it's an aligned query. Aligned query means that the group by operation is happening entirely within the federation member, right? And I can guarantee that because it's the atomic unit, right? It's aligned to the atomic unit. If I'm grouping by the atomic unit ID, right, I'm good to go. If I go and do something slightly different, and in this case, actually group by company name, it gets a bit more interesting. All right. So in this case, I want the total order value by company name, and we can see that that's probably not going to work, right? Because I've now got two entries for Rally Master Company Incorporated. What does that tell me? All right. So actually, I've got customers who are from the same company that are spread across multiple federation members. So what I'm actually going to need to do here is I'm going to need to go through and do this as a two-stage step. So I'm going to need to go and run the member query and then run a post-processing step. So what I'm going to do in this case is I'm going to run that first query. Right, and then I'm going to go and basically sum up. I'm going to sum the sums. Yeah, again, grouping by company name, so grouping by that unaligned group by identifier. So you see, that's done what I'd want it to do, right? So it's gone round and got the sum by company name in each database, and then it's grouped those because we're dealing with an unaligned query. So, it is, I think it's using temp tables, yeah. It's basically going to use a temp table back in the root database. It's not super simple to do, right, because we don't have those cross-database query capabilities. Okay, so let's go through and do an aligned query with non-additive aggregates, right?
And so that's getting me my average average order size per customer. Yeah, and again, we can see that's going to work, right, because it is an aligned query. Right, so because I'm grouping by the customer ID, we are good to go. What if I then want to take that and say, actually, I want the overall average order size, right? So obviously, I can't just go and take the average of the averages, right? Because it's a non-additive aggregate. So if I go and do, you know, effectively go and average that, it's just not going to work. So in order to do that, what I need to do is I need to get individually the count of the orders and the sum of the order values, and then I need to perform the averaging operation in my summary query. All right, and so that's going to give me the correct average order value. Okay, so in terms of administration, so each, the federation route and each of its members has its own schema, right? So that means that if we need to make schema changes after we've split, we actually have to go and apply those schema changes manually to each of our federation members. This has pros and cons. It does mean that you have the potential to break your database schema by introducing schema inconsistencies across your federation members. It does also mean that you can have inconsistent schemas and therefore effectively upgrade a portion of your application in trial mode before you go and upgrade the whole lot. Schema deployment's pretty simple using that fanout utility. If you do that, try and write idempotent scripts, so scripts that actually, you know, do things like, so that they can run again and again and again, and they'll always succeed. Right, you know, so, for example, you know, check that stuff exists, and if it doesn't exist, I then go and actually create it. In terms of configuring your federation layout, so you need to decide how many federation members I'm going to start with and how am I going to split them. And that is going to depend a chunk on exactly how you've chosen your federation key. One of the reasons why GUID is quite nice is because we know, right, that we just cover the 128-bit integer address space and we can just chop it up evenly. We start thinking about, say, if we were using the logins table, right? So the logins table, using email address and just taking the var binary of the email address, what's the problem with that? You get sort of clumpy. It doesn't really give us a nice distribution. So what we want to try and do is we'll take a hash, right? So if you take the hash of the email address, that's starting to work a whole lot better, right? And again, we don't mind if we have multiple entries with the same atomic unit, with the same hash. We don't mind too much about hash collisions, right? Because that just means there's going to be multiple with that hash. So we store the hash, we store the actual email address, we store the password hash, we store the customer ID. Right? So you want to try and look for a hashing algorithm that gives you a random distribution so that your data is spread out nicely. How do you provide a range? So, I mean, again, so you can provide a GUID range because a GUID is just a 128-bit integer. So, I mean, literally, a GUID is the hexadecimal representation of 128-bit integer. So you give me a GUID, and I can read it back to you as a number. And then it's just think of the number, negative whatever, through to positive whatever, that's your range. So you ideally want to favor having smaller and more members. The more you can split your database, the more you're taking advantage of the fact that you're buying the database by size and not by committed server resources. Right? So literally, your 100 meg database, as it stands, gets a similar amount of server capacity in terms of CPU and RAM as a 150 gig database. So if you're a clever cookie, right, and you're really just looking at this for load shedding, you just buy a whole load of 100 gig databases at $4.99 US a month, or whatever it is in Australian dollars when they convert it, given that you're at parity, but they don't really apply a good exchange rate. Right? You just buy a whole lot of 100 meg databases, and you can literally just spread your load out of a whole across a whole lot of servers in the server farm. So where possible, where you're splitting for load, right, go as small as you possibly can. You can use the dynamic management views in order to determine when and where to split. Right? Elasticity is possible, but you'll need to manage your repartitioning, right? So basically, you know, you just need to sit there and watch your database and choose when and where to split. Deciding when is, because it's an asynchronous operation, you need to act in sufficient time so that your application doesn't fall over before you get to do the split. Right, so you probably want to have some metrics. You know, actually have put your application under a load profile, so you know, hey, you know, when the load starts hitting this, I need to start splitting it up. You also need to be careful not to overshoot. Right, so if you build some sort of automated mechanism, and it's looking at metrics, you need to be careful that you don't go and end up splitting far too finely, because without merge, it's very hard to end up going backwards. Some changes and improvements. So there are some significant performance improvements that have been released recently around the use federation statement. So they're doing a much better job of actually caching connections through to the database nodes at the gateway. Just a quick sort of refresher on how SQL Azure works. Your database tool connects using the tabular data stream protocol to one of these things called a gateway node. A gateway node looks and smells, to all intents and purposes, like a SQL server, but basically it's a smart proxy server. Right? So it accepts your connection, and then it goes and routes you to the appropriate real database inside the database, inside the data center. So what they've done is they've made some improvements on those gateway nodes that does a better job of basically mapping those connections and supporting connection pooling as well. In terms of stuff that's coming in the next quarter, we're going to now start supporting identity columns and timestamp columns on your reference tables. So remember, those are tables in each federation member, right, that don't have the federated on statement. They're the eventually consistent ones. Again, use caution here, right? Use great deals of caution here. Because if you think about those, what are those reference tables? Well, they're a copy of the data in each of those federation members. Cool. I'm going to turn on timestamp. Am I going to have anything that remotely looks like consistency of my data across those federation members? No. Okay, I'm going to turn on identity. Am I going to have anything that remotely looks like it? Yes, as long as I am absolutely diligent about always performing exactly the same queries on every federation member and never having a transaction fail. Can I guarantee that I will never have a transaction fail in SQL Azure? No, right? Because of the query throttle, right? Because of repartitioning operations, because occasionally I might just drop a connection because I'm in Australia and it's in Singapore. So proceed with caution. I still think this is a really bad idea. I won't be using it. Data sync service. So the data sync service is going to now support federation members, so you can sync data into and out of federation members. I think there's an opportunity to use data sync to actually support merging. There are some improvements around some ability to swap federation members in and out. So we've got this new thing called the switch statement coming that lets you effectively switch databases in and out of the federation. So you can say, actually, I've got this range from 100 to 200 stored in this database. I'm going to pluck that database out, stick it over here, just hold on to it in safekeeping, and I'm going to drop a new one in, and actually that new one I'm going to put a completely different schema on. I'm going to go and do a whole lot of crazy stuff on. I'm going to try it out. No, it didn't work. Pluck it back out, drop the other one back in. All right. So obviously, that gives you some interesting things you can do around copy database. And the guy who asked about it being across multiple data centers, this potentially gives you some opportunities to move tenants across data centers, right? Because you could potentially have the same database in multiple data centers. And if you want to move a tenant, you'd copy their database out, move it to the other database data center, and switch it back in. Yeah, so there are some opportunities there. The thing I think could be quite interesting is an ability to do eventually consistent merge. So basically what you would do is you would swap the members you no longer wanted out. Right, you would drop out those members. So that would then collapse that range into a single federation member in terms of the data-dependent routing. But obviously it's dropped all the data, but hey, you didn't have any data in them anyway because you switched them out, and then you would basically bring those back online as individual databases and merge that, copy that data back in, maybe using DataSync. There is geo DR there at the moment. And there are some significant improvements coming in terms of actually providing you overall geo high availability for your entire federated database. Now, this is disaster recovery, don't think of it as real time. Don't think of it as being an immediate switchover. It really is designed for disaster recovery only. Right, I ran 2 minutes long. I did rush a little bit at the end. So I will throw the code that you saw and both of those T-SQL scripts up on my blog later this afternoon, along with some links to that fan-out query tool. Places to keep an eye on is Jihan's blog with lots of stuff on federations. He's the PM for federations, so he's a good guy to keep an eye on, and also to follow those Twitter hashtags and addresses. We were pretty good. We had a small group, so we did take some questions throughout, which I thought was quite good. But with that, I'll open to some more questions. Interesting content? Anyone got any really big applications? No? Yeah, I don't know why they. It probably just makes it hard, right? So to use the foreign key relationship, it makes all queries hard. Because, you know, the way they've, so the question is, can you use the foreign key relationship rather than having to flow the federation key through all of the federated tables? And it just means if you want to go and do a query on the order lines table, you've connected to, you know, if you did it with foreign key relationship, you'd connected to atomic unit customer ID 100. The where clause that it has to go and automatically add on to your query in order to keep you safe becomes very complex. So, you know, it is a little bit of a breach of the model, but it's not that bad, honestly. Yeah, in terms of mapping your schema up from on-premise. Yeah, that does introduce some challenges there. Is there a way to maintain duplication? So the question is there a way to maintain replication? And the way to maintain replication is to use DataSync, right? So DataSync, it's not going to give you strong consistency, right? So it's not going to do immediate commits across all of everything, but DataSync will allow you to effectively update one database and then have that database copied out to others. So DataSync can be a good way to deal with your reference tables, for example. So you might have a reference database and then use DataSync to push that reference data into each of your federation members. Yes. Yep. No. So updates, there is no distributed transaction support. So if you've got to update across multiple federation members using a fan-out query, that can only be eventually consistent. Right? You've only got soft consistency there. And again, if you're finding you're having to write transactions that go across multiple databases, you just have to go and have a look at that query and just check that you have actually federated correctly. Righto, folks, thank you very much for coming along. Please do your evals. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.